One of the initial reasons for starting this podcast was to honestly become more social, to meet people and talk to them. At the time, I was becoming aware that I was slipping into old habits and becoming quite hermetic. On the road, I'd keep to myself, despite the whirlwind environment of rock and roll. But then, when I'd be off the road, it would be worse, staying in, not going out, and only talking to people through email. Talking to people face-to-face would only happen when the next tour started up again. So this podcast has helped me get out there and meet people and engage. But also, selfishly, it allows me to spend a good chunk of time with people I admire. People like Duff McKagan, Henry Rollins, Lydia Chris, Scott Thompson. They've all been nice enough to give me their attention, answer my queries, and spend some time to hang. I always think of it like winning some sort of contest, which allows me access into their inner sanctums. However, these are people that I followed from my teen years onward into adulthood. Rarely, if ever, has there been someone who I have a connection with from when I was a kid. We tend to shed those years, and really, given the nature of this podcast, a podcast that focuses on music and sometimes comedy, when would that world intersect with mine? Well, it did. It has. And with someone who I've known about since I was a kid. If Canada is synonymous with hockey, then sportscaster Dave Hodge is synonymous with Canadian hockey. Here in Canada, he is a legend. Hockey Night in Canada is an institution, and Dave was the face of Hockey Night in Canada while I was growing up. I was a rabid Maple Leaf fan. I loved the Leafs, followed the seasons, knew all the players, and watched Hockey Night in Canada religiously. I even wrote to some of the NHL players and got responses from Daryl Sittler and Ron Ellis of the Maple Leafs and Bob Gainey from the Montreal Canadiens. Soon, though, I discovered rock and roll, and my fanaticism for hockey got traded in for my fanatical devotion of all things hard rock. I said goodbye to hockey and sports in general, and never looked back. And the two worlds stayed safely apart for me, neither one getting too close to the other, despite the fact that we've participated in events held by the Tampa Bay Lightning and even NHL exhibition games abroad. And our songs get regularly played at Blue Jays and NHL games. But when we were asked back in 2003 to participate in a music project put on by none other than the sports network, TSN, these two worlds came together. We were supposed to be singing a song called Silver Cup in tribute to the Stanley Cup. It was a hockey thing. The song was written by our good friend Andy Curran of Coney Hatch fame. And with Andy involved, we knew we were in good hands, but we chose to rewrite the song and make it our own. While at the TSN television studio, in the dressing room, in walked Dave Hodge. This figure from my hockey days as a kid. And at this point, an almost mythical figure in my mind. Any dyed-in-the-wool Canadian knows what I mean when I say my mind was totally 100% blown away. Kind of ecstatic that he was standing in front of us, but blown away that he knew our albums, owned our albums, named them off like he was naming off the first string Leafs. It was then that I found out that Dave Hodge, the face of hockey for me, was the biggest music fan I had ever met. After that day, whenever his name would be brought up, I'd retell this meeting to friends, and Dave and I reconnected a few years later on Twitter. When I would offer to send Dave our latest album, he would reply that he already owned it. You know, when things get shitty on the road or what have you, it's little tiny bits of knowledge like this. Knowing Dave Hodge is a fan of your music keeps me going and reminds me all is not so bad. Now, doing this episode, I made the trek over to Dave Hodge's abode, where he showed me his massive music collection, CDs upon CDs. I tried to take it all in, trying to remember some bands in his collection so we would have something to talk about on the podcast. But when you talk about music with Dave, The floodgates open, and you can sit there for hours chatting. And that's just what we did. This podcast catches only a bit of my five-hour hang with Dave Hodge that day. It was a day I won't soon forget. If you had told me when we were starting this band that one day I would end up in Dave Hodge's house talking about Wilco and the Traveling Wilburys, I wouldn't have believed it. I'm telling you, I was on cloud nine when it was all said and done. I felt like throwing my hat up in the air, just like Mary Tyler Moore did. So enjoy this, please. It's an episode with someone who is very well known in one field, and complete fanatic about another. From his POV, he comes to the table with a unique perspective and fascinating stories that will not disappoint. I was genuinely inspired by Dave's enthusiasm and passion for music. It made me want to go out and go record shopping afterwards. And we even exchanged some musical recommendations. Of course, Dave's list was bigger than mine, and I didn't know a lot of the bands on his list. I want to thank Blue Mic Microphones and Skullcandy Headphones for their support of the podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode, and if you like what you hear, please leave a rating or a review on the iTunes Store. Your reviews and ratings are helping the podcast's profile because we're still listed in the What's Hot section on iTunes Podcasts, so thank you very much, and keep them coming. Okay, without further ado, here's Mr. Dave Hodge, the man, the legend. He's on the podcast. It makes me so happy that he is. And it starts now. The Take Your Jones podcast is the best around. They play the kiddies, take your school, they love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Take me in from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down. When the weather is bad and there's nothing much to do, take a listen, would you now, to what Danko Jones would do. It's the middle of the night and you better do it fast. Turn the speakers up loud for Danko's podcast.
I know that disco and rock and roll aren't supposed to mix, and we all know how great a rock guitarist Danko is, but when I accompanied him one night to a disco nightclub, I watched in awe as Danko tore up the dance floor. He was like Danny Terrio, John Travolta, and Adrian Zemed all rolled into one. When he was finished dancing, the music stopped and everyone applauded. The two of us immediately left the club and ended up in a blues bar where I watched Danko jam on CCR and Chuck Berry covers till dawn. It was amazing.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts now!
So right before I turned on the mics, we were talking about how we first met, which was maybe a dozen years ago.
I think probably more than that.
Yeah. And we had this odd request to go into TSN and do this song written by Andy Curran called Silver Cup. We kind of turned it on its head and we wrote our own Silver Cup song. And we were in the green room or the dressing room or what have you at TSN. You walked in, and you basically, I've told this story 20 times to people over the years, you blew my mind for two reasons. First of all, you are someone from, now I have to admit, full disclosure, I don't really follow sports anymore, but because I discovered rock and roll. Before I did, I was a full-blown Leafs fanatic, and you are someone who, when I think of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think of Daryl Sittler, Lanny McDonald, Paul Mateer, Boye Salming, and you. And you walk into the room, and you know our band, you know the albums, the songs, you know other bands that we are contemporaries with. It just blew me away because we were in this kind of sports environment.
Which only proves that you can fit both into your life.
Yeah.
Sports and rock and roll.
True.
So come back to the Leafs. It's time.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of Leafs games since then, or a few. And yes, it's for me to get into hockey again the way I was,
it's such a I'm an all or nothing, all in or nothing kind of guy. But I feel the tug. Trust me, I do. I love the smell. I used to skate a lot. I love the smell of an arena, lacing the skates on. I love it. I love all of it.
Well, speaking of knowing the records, happy release day.
Thank you.
Happens to be Wildcat's birthday, right? And,
yes.
Good luck with it. I'll flatter you, you know, several times perhaps before we start. But in all those years of listening to all those Danko Jones records and in being asked, Dave, what are some of your favorite rock and roll songs? Like just pure rock and roll. Don't get too fancy with it. I always mention Lover Call because I think that that's what it is. And now I will tell you, you don't need to be told perhaps, but your fans or the fans that are still to come, that My Little Rock and Roll ranks with that. And that's on Wildcat, as you know. I love all sorts of music, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But there's something about just basic, straight-ahead, go-for-it rock songs that will always appeal to me. And so those would be my two favorite Danko Jones straight ahead, let's go rock and roll songs.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. I mean, you liking the new song bodes well for the album. I believe it's a good omen that you. I'm here today,
yep.
On the release day.
Coincidence, by the way. I mean,
yeah. Well, coincidence. I knew this was going to come out March 3rd.
And I just thought if I had you here March 3rd, you might bring me a copy.
Yeah,
and you did.
Yes.
So thank you.
And I rushed, I was really adamant on the emails leading up to this to our management going, hey, I need those promo copies. I need some promo copies ASAP because I knew I was coming here. And yeah, there's a lot to do on release day. I have to go back home this afternoon and do a live Q&A on Facebook. And earlier this week, I had a few emails going, hey, can we do this? Can we do that? We can't do anything, man. I've got this trip planned. We'll do it after I come back.
All right, I'm flattered.
So, yeah, definitely. This was a long time coming. I mean,
I just have to find a place to fit the new stuff that you brought me because, as you see, I'm outgrowing my music room.
Well, you emailed me leading up to this going, you know, I'll show you my collection, and you said thousands. So that pricked up my ears. Thousands of CDs. I need to see it. And yeah, you didn't exaggerate. And it's quite impressive. I love it. And the fact that you come from the sports world, which is a world that doesn't necessarily embrace music deeply, and vice versa. I love when you meet someone who kind of just eschews all that and just says, this is what I am. I really dig it. I wish the two worlds would kind of commingle a little closer and deeper.
They do. They do. And I'm seeing it a lot when I go to a show. There will be there could be hockey players or baseball players or whatever, and vice versa. Lots of music people at games. Whether there is involved with the other. Part of what I call my two-pronged life, maybe not, because I'm a serious collector, as you see. And
yeah.
There's music playing in this house and in my car constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife has had to get used to that. And but we go to lots of shows. We're always the oldest people in the room.
I love it.
When we cross the border, Buffalo perhaps, they will say, what are you going to see our Kells for? You'll be the oldest people there. And I say, and we won't be shocked because it's happened before.
Yeah.
So I love that band, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're probably one of Canada's biggest bands. Contemporary.
You want to say it's happened fast, but I first ran into them, I guess. I was at the Vancouver Olympics, so... 6-7 years ago, mm-hmm. And to say that they would be where they are now then probably would have been a stretch, but I've seen the development. I've seen how hard they work. I have seen how well they plan what they do, and this was all This was all charted. And they're great guys. And I would ask you, I mean, is there a successful music person that you know that doesn't work hard at it? I don't think you can be lazy and get where you want to go, can you?
No, it's just too competitive now to not, you know, be really diligent. You sleep on it for one day and you've lost so much ground. I understand their hard work. We met those guys, maybe 5 years ago in Germany. They were the opening band for Billy Talent on their European tour. And I guess the deal was, you want Billy Talent, you get this other band that some of the promoters didn't know on the festivals. But, you know, they got to play these big festivals. And since then, I think they can come back and do their own. I know a couple of those guys. Anthony, the keyboard player.
Anthony Carone, yes.
We met, and the drummer, I don't know his name, but he's
Tim.
A friend. Tim, he's a friend of our drummer. Right. Drummers kind of stick together. And we did this thing, which was crazy. It was for, it might have been for TSN. It was with Jeremy Taggart, drummer from Our Lady Peace. He got this band together. It was me, Wade McNeil from Alexis on Fire, Anthony, Tim, and Alex St. Kitts, who's a bass player, and Jeremy on drums, and we played these video game theme songs.
To an audience? Or
no, in a studio, and they filmed it as well. There's footage somewhere. I have to dig it up, but that's how I actually jammed with a couple of the guys from the Arkells.
I tried to dig up the video, our video, of the Silver Cup, and I guess it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There are other versions of it that you can find.
There's like Maestro Fresh West doing a version or something.
Yeah, a lot of bands went through. The Trues, I know, I think, did it.
But we did an original.
Yes, no, I know.
I can't find it.
No, that's a shame.
Probably the rarest.
Because the start of the video was me on stage making funny faces, trying to be like you, maybe. And I was ridiculed at work for like 2 weeks. Like know what you do and know what you can't do, and don't do it. Because they played it on air, and had a big laugh, and you know I didn't care.
Yeah, well I remember that Silver Cup. The one guy who remembers it, the only guy who's ever come back to me with it, is Sean Cullen, the comedian.
Sure.
And I think he even did this on this podcast when we had him. And he goes, Silver Cup, I remember it. And I'm like, you remember that? Nobody remembers
that.
No,
it's obscure by now.
But, yeah.
Yeah, in those days, well, I was there was the ultimate marriage of sports and music. And still to this day, obviously, Super Bowl has to have music at halftime, Grey Cup, all that stuff. And I do think that there's a connection. And I think musicians see athletes as if they're on stage, and I think they empathize with what they're going through, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And for all the musicians that walk out on stage with hockey jerseys, obviously there's a connection there. That may be rather superficial, but I'm living proof that, you know, you can be a big sports fan and big music fan, and I do think my life would be. Would be empty. I'll say that empty without music, because sports is my work and I love it and I can't imagine doing anything else. I've never done anything else, but you can't love your work as much as you love your play if there's something that you love to play at.
Right.
And it makes your work better to be able to get away from it. And that's what music gives me. The other thing it gives me is it keeps me young. At least feeling young.
Right.
Because I can relate to kids. I mean, the guys in Arkells are, you know, they're more than half. They're half my age. And then some. And I can talk music to them and have them go, you know that?
Yeah.
You were there? You saw that? And I walk away going, you know, I'm in my 70s and they're in their 30s and, you know, we might as well be the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, what I'm telling you is I like tomorrow's music better than yesterday's music. I wanna see what's next.
Wow.
And know whether I like it or not, and know that I can talk about it, know that I can go and see it if possible. And the stuff that I've already seen and heard and I've collected is always going to be there. And not to say I don't like it, but the idea of a classic rock station, okay, mm-hmm. classic rock's fine, and you can play it, but play today's stuff too.
Well, I really want to paint a picture here as to when, we talk about music and people think, okay, Dave Hodge is a music fan. I really want to let people know just how deep this music fanaticism of yours goes. So, for example, if you say, first of all, you throw out Wilco. Oh, you have an album or you've heard a song. No, you've got bootlegs. I mean, this goes way deep. I mean, it's just not. And then Uncle Tupelo, Sunvolt, you go deep with this stuff. This isn't just some kind of fair weather kind of like hobby you do on the side. This is for real.
No, a true collector needs to have everything. You're a buyer if you buy half the catalog. You're a collector if you got it all and you need it all. And right. it's almost an obsession. And I need it the day it comes out, if possible. So that's, yeah. The first record I ever bought, I was 10 years old. And you got to start somewhere, right? And I'm always asked this. And it's a kind of a funny story. Because the record, it was a 78, a single. You know what a 78 was?
I do, yeah.
Is
in between a 45 and a 33.
Right. The song was called Band of Gold, and the singer was, I can't make this up, a guy named Don Cherry. And Don Cherry, the singer,
okay.
was also a PGA Tour golfer.
Okay.
So he combined music and sports better than I do.
I got to ask, when you finally met
the other Don Cherry,
did you go, I'm a huge fan?
And anyway, Band of Gold, it's still, you can find it by Don Cherry, but the latest Loretta Lynn album has her version of Band of Gold. And so that's, I think the second record I bought was by Pat Boone, right. Love Letters in the Sand. And then I just kept purchasing. And all of the vinyl has disappeared because it was in disrepair. I couldn't find room for it. The thing about CDs is, you can fit more of them into a room than you can
right.
Those large albums. And I do have, thousands of records, and I went from Don Cherry to Bob Dylan to Motown to Wilco to all sorts of things in between. I just love music. I can't tell you I like this kind of music. I could tell you that I don't collect classical music or traditional jazz or hip hop, but that doesn't mean I won't listen to it, can't listen to it and enjoy it. I just, I don't have room for it.
Yeah, I understand. So your trajectory, just talking to you briefly before we started the mics, you mentioned, this is what kind of got me to start the podcast, is you mentioned how you saw the Temptations back in the day. So this has been going on for, like you're saying, quite a while. What is the trajectory? You just kind of laid it out, though. But from Motown to Dylan.
Dylan to Motown for me.
Dylan to Motown.
Dylan just grabbed me, who knows why. Because in those days, all you heard was, he can't sing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't disagree with that. But the songs, obviously, were powerful. They resonated. The whole protest movement in those days interested me, fascinated me. I had to go see Bob Dylan in New York at the Bitter End in Greenwich Village when I was a teenager in high school, hopping on a bus and just... I had to say I'd done it, and I've seen him since, obviously. Sadly, these days, it's not high on my list of things I want to do. But Bob Dylan and then the entire folk movement in the 60s really grabbed me. So, also I can give you all sorts of Fred Neil and Tim Hardin and all sorts of names like that, Jesse Colin Young, Eric Anderson, and I collected like crazy everything from that qualified as folk in the 60s. And then worked close to Detroit, my first job in the mid-60s, and so crossing the border with a chance to see the Temptations at a club called the 20 Grand. And in those days, Detroit was a scary place to be.
Mm-hmm.
One day of my life covered the riots there, and it's not something I like to talk about because it was scary, and one day was enough. But anyway, I fell in love with all sorts of Motown stuff, and then today, as you saw, you can find just about any kind of music in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw a Rancid CD. I saw a Buck Cherry CD. Yeah. I mean, it's also a lot of rock and roll, yeah. Punk rock. I mean, I think a lot of people in Canada would flip if they realized, and I think after this they will know, that Dave Hodge collects Rancid CDs. And I think that is unbelievably awesome. I think that is just amazing. What leads you to those avenues? Like, what leads you to the Buck Cherry? Was there, after Dylan, Temptations, was there like a, did you get heavier? Did you like get into punk rock? I mean,
I just didn't want to shut out anything that I thought I might like, or, yeah, I mean, it's an adventurous sort of a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I've heard you say this, that you, when in the days when you could buy CDs and walk into a store and spend, you know, an hour or more, that you bought stuff because the cover appealed to you.
Yeah.
I would add to that that the name of the band, I would have no idea what, but the name kind of intrigued me. So I'll take that home and see what, I think the first, the band, the best example of that was a band called the Detroit Cobras.
And I
had no idea what I was going to listen to when I got it home, but I looked at this name and I thought, that can't be really bad. It might be really good. And it was.
Right.
And to this day, I'll take a chance.
Now, what leads you to the music? Like, do you read blogs? Do you subscribe to magazines?
Well, the days when subscribing to magazines, when there were magazines to subscribe to, there are not too many anymore. I did a lot of that. No Depression was the music magazine that I had to have every month. Now I'm probably on 25 music sites. Most of them I'll visit every day. Just make sure I'm not missing. You know, some days are busier than others,
but
if I can, and just have a quick glance. See if there's anything that surprises me or that I want to know more about. And so it's easy now, right? The internet is fantastic to follow music or anything else if that's what you want to do.
Well, how do you acquire it? Like hard copies? Do you trips?
I download ever since, as I say, the trip to the store is no longer possible, really. And there came a time when you could walk into a store and there was nothing there to buy or to see, but in the days when CD shopping or record shopping was fruitful, finding the right music store, I guess still to this day, I mean, for vinyl collectors, obviously, to know where to go is really important. And you want to go to the place where, you know, any chance you got this or you could order it or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I spent a lot of time just digging around for stuff. And in the days when I traveled more than I do, I had, you know, in major cities around the country and the U.S., I had to know a good restaurant and a good music store. That's not necessarily in that order.
Right. It's like you're a touring musician. Those are usually the two things on my top list too.
Sure.
And like you said, you know, record stores have kind of gone away, but they're coming back. They are. If you go, do you make trips downtown to Toronto to?
Yeah. Except mostly vinyl, no? Or you could find.
I guess so.
I think so.
Yeah, but there's like places like Sonic Boom that's got like CD sections as well. Vortex, which was my place, that was, you know, that closed last December, and they had an equal amount of CDs used and vinyl.
See, I think there should have been funerals for the best places that were forced to close because of what we know now is, you know, the music industry's struggles, because I can download, you know, 10 CDs in 8.5 minutes.
Yep.
But I'd prefer to take the drive, spend the hour and a half, and have something in a bag to come home with. This isn't as satisfying or as fulfilling this way, even though it's a lot more efficient.
Well, there's a site, maybe you know of it, vibrations.ca.
I don't know that.
And they basically let collectors know where all the record shows are in along the 401.
Oh.
And every Sunday, whether it's in Guelph or St. Catharines or Kingston, Mississauga, they've got these record shows. And some of them are mainly vinyl, but some of them are record and CD shows.
Okay.
And they've got these vendors there. And it usually starts at 10 a.m. in some Holiday Inn somewhere or some, you know, Canadian Legion Hall or whatever. Or you could go at 9 a.m. and pay the $20 for the early fee and be out of there when everybody's lining up, which is actually someone told me to do that, and I started doing that, and it does pay off.
Hmm.
So that's something to maybe think about with the, you know, acquiring more hard copy stuff.
Now, mind you, my wife would like me to stop. As the Visa bills come in, you've been shopping again. Yes, I have. You'll never listen to all of those. I mean, I can't live long enough. If I wanted to devote every hour of every day, I'm never going to listen to all of those anymore. But my answer is, you're right, except what I don't know is which ones I will want to listen to, and I got to make sure they're all there in case that's the one I want.
So are you like CDs like I am with books, where you're constantly acquiring and running it without no time to go through them?
That can happen, yeah. Although I think I'm safe in saying that I've listened at least once top to bottom to everyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, if it's obvious junk at the beginning, I suppose I threw it out. Anything I've still got, I've heard front to back.
Well, like you were saying, we're talking about lack of time versus, you know, the monumental volume of stuff you have. What is your way of listening then? Because I understand that dilemma as well. So what I try to do is kind of pick, even for this trip over to your place, I handpicked 5-6 CDs, and that's going to accompany me on this trip. Now I won't listen to all of them, but they're kind of in the foreground, in my frontal lobe. And I'll go through them. And is there any way that you listen to music, any kind of sort of routine?
I will make a list of CDs that I need to listen to, and I'll go from that list until I get to the end, and then I'll make another one. Because I'd drive myself crazy if I walked in there, now, what do I want to listen to today?
Yeah.
I go, on this crazy wall, that over there, this. So I plan it ahead just by writing stuff down, and I follow the list religiously. I mean, it feels nerdy, really, to, you know, okay, this is a new day. What am I going to listen to? I'll pull out the list and see what's on it, go down, pick them up, put them in the car or wherever, and that's the way I do it. Otherwise, indecision would drive me crazy.
You're only gonna. I find myself whenever I have that situation, I'll just knee jerk back into the same 10 bands that I've listened to since I was 11.
And but I try real hard to vary it, so I don't get stuck on. And then what happens is, you get around to, you know, Arkells or Wilco or Frank Turner or Danko Jones and I say to myself, I should be listening to this more. Like, why am I? But if you haven't listened to it for a while and it seems fresh again, and And so I guess you got to have a plan. I don't know. When you have that many, it requires some kind of logical thinking that tells you what to play next.
Now, when you visited these record stores, aside from your wife, and you go to these shows or whatever, is there someone else who in your life who kind of helps you spiral upwards and turns you on, and you turn them on, and back and forth and back and forth?
I have friends, but not many who like music, love music the way I do, and are willing to attend shows as I do, and be out late, you know, sometimes very late. But I'll go myself, and I mean, I'm very close with everybody connected with the Horseshoe Tavern, so I can go walk in by myself, and I'm not by myself for, you know, longer than five
right.
seconds. Lee's Palace, you know, same owners. And then, you know, not to drop names or to suggest that there's any kind of privilege involved in this, but I can find my way backstage most places. Most often, I'm going to see people that I know, not just bands
right.
that I'm aware of. And so it's always a social time before and after the show, too. So, yeah, you'll find me in lots of places that maybe other people wouldn't expect to see me. But, no, I don't. I mean, there's not a band of brothers that, you know, we got to go see this. But, you know, a few friends.
Or at least someone who, like, emails you going, Dave, check out this YouTube link of this band.
Right.
You got to hear this song.
Yeah, well, that's often other musicians that are...
Right, because I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, there's like five YouTube clips that you need to check out. I need to send you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after seeing that room.
Feel free. Feel free.
I remember when, you know, you're talking about dressing rooms. When we were in the dressing room at TSN and you walked into the room, like... Okay, I have to admit, it's just another for us. It was just another thing we had to do to promote the band, or you know, do this thing for Andy, because we did it for Andy.
Andy Curran,
at least
yeah.
in my head, Andy Curran.
Now, this is 2003, I think. So we're
yeah, that makes sense because it's
that's
like,
when the Silver Cup idea was launched,
and we were on our Born a Lion,
yeah.
you know, cycle. So yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, we're just heading away, just promoting it. This is another thing to do. So, you know, you walk into the room, and I would assume the same happens in the Horseshoe for me. And I'm sure, you know, obviously, you know, Craig and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and JC there. But, I don't know what I was doing. I can't remember. But you walked in, and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is pretty heavy stuff happening. But not just that. It was, you started to, like, drop... Like, I remember it so well. You said you started talking about the New Pornographers.
Love them.
To me. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, this is amazing. And that's when I knew, okay, this guy's a serious music fan.
And a serious Canadian music fan, honestly.
And
I lived through the day when you know, Canadian content regulations were introduced in Canadian broadcasting. And my first reaction was, you know, we don't need mandatory rules that say you must play Canadian music because it's good enough to stand on its own. But then I realized, you know what, it wasn't getting played enough. And people didn't know enough about how great the music was in this country. And so now we've got, you know, awards called Juno that were named after the head of the CRTC, Pierre Juno, spelled differently, who brought in those regulations. And, you know, it sounds rather, you know, it sounds like protectionism, and I wouldn't advocate it necessarily for other things, but the rise of Canadian music mm-hmm. Proved the worth of that idea. And now, you know, I often say this, and it's gimmicky and it's hokey, but I really do think that if there were a Music Olympics, Canada would win gold
mm-hmm.
For all of the stuff that is successful today and for all that preceded it. And as, you know, I'm hoping to see for all that's still to come. And the rest of the world is very aware. I mean, you're proof, right? You're what would we call you in Europe? Idol? God?
No. just a rocker guy, yeah, guy in a band.
You know what I'm talking about.
Right. I mean, well, I've seen it too. When we first started going to Europe, I couldn't really see any other bands who were doing it what we were doing. And then 2-3 years into it, I started to notice everybody started to come over to the point where it got to the, when people would find out we're from Canada, that they would just go Rush. Oh, you know, Rush, like, you know, they're next door neighbors of ours. To now it's more like, oh, Canada. So there's this and there's Arcade Fire and there's Justin Bieber and there's, you know, Avril Lavigne and, you know, Billy Talent. So yeah, it's gained some ground over the years, and I've noticed it firsthand when people come back to, you know, when they hear about Canada, what is it that identifies Canada? And it's a lot more than just Rush.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I say, you can go back, you know, Leonard Cohen, Neil Young, Lightfoot, and then today, you know, Sam Roberts, Arkells again, Blue Rodeo, Tragically Hip for all of those wonderful years. And it's more than I should be a fan of Canadian music. It's how can you not be if you're exposed to this? And I think Canadians have come to that realization. You know, the outpouring for the Tragically Hip was wonderful. It was powerful. It was emotional. It was sad and yet exhilarating all at once, and you had to be there. So, and I do think that the rest of the world is, you know, I hear bands say, yeah, but we can't play the States. Nobody, you know, they don't care about us, or they don't like us, or we can't draw an audience. And you want to say, you know, you guys are good enough that that shouldn't last forever. You know, if you want it to happen, keep trying. And if it doesn't happen, come back here because we love you here. So I'm a flag waver, and I don't apologize for it. And I think that there's a real funny story that I continue to tell all the time to two of my best friends in music. One is Joel Plaskett, and the other is Willie Nile. And I don't know if you know Willie or not.
I don't know.
But Willie is a New York rock. You need to know Willie Nile. A, because he's the only guy that'll bring me on stage to sing with him that I know of, without me asking. And I'd never ask, but I'd also never say no. So I was at having dinner with both of them, just having met Willie, because Joel introduced me to Willie. And we were going to hear them both. And so Willie played, and then Joel was the main attraction. And I had said, prior to the show, I'd said to Willie, Joel is a national treasure. This guy is just, he's that good. And Willie was just being introduced to him, really. They were played a couple shows together, I think, before that. And then Joel was on stage later on in the evening, and I felt a tap on my shoulder and turned around. Willie's shorter than I am, let's put it that way. He looked at me and he went, "This guy's a national treasure." And I wanted to say, yeah, that's my line. I just told you that, but yeah, it can be your line now. And he just sat there, and he was in awe of what Joel was doing. And every time since, and this is going back half a dozen years at least, maybe more, every time Joel's name comes up and I'm with Willie, Willie will say to me, "That guy's a national treasure." And I've stopped reminding him that it was my line initially. Here's a U.S. rock and roll guy being introduced to a Canadian rock star and being blown away by him.
Well, you mentioned I need to know who Willie Nile is. I don't know who he is. Part of the reason why I'm here is anticipating this conversation was hoping to get turned on to new kinds of bands and people and music.
The Willie Nile Band is a four-piece band that you would love. And Willie he's a Brooklyn guy now, I think, born in Buffalo, but would tell stories about living across the street from Patti Smith and down the street from Bob Dylan, he is a very close friend of Bruce Springsteen, and is now, as I learned the other day, preparing an album of Bob Dylan songs. So for me, Willie Niles singing Bob Dylan is going to be special.
Wow. Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. That's leading up to this conversation, I was speaking to somebody and I said, yeah, one of the reasons why I want to talk to you is, yeah, sure. You know, you've got the association with hockey and Canada, and for my past when I was growing up, it's a big thing for me. But aside from all that, people I want to talk to are I want to talk to huge music fans about their loves in hopes that it can lead me to music get me excited to turn me on to new kinds of musics that, you know, maybe I know of, but I just was never guided into the world. So walking, I asked you, I needed to see your collection, and, you know, we took a little quick tour, but yeah, like walking around there, I wanted to, you know, kind of walk out of here with a little kind of list of things that I should go and check out.
Well, we'll have lunch after this, and we can bring a pen and paper, and I'll get some from you. You should walk away with a couple of stories. I should tell you the trip to see Dylan was interesting, but I'm going to tell you about eating dinner in New York at Smith and Walensky's, which is this prominent steakhouse.
Okay.
I was working at that time in my life for 1 year as a Minnesota North Stars play-by-play announcer. I did a little play-by-play, not that you'd know it if you weren't in Minnesota.
I remember the North Stars, Bobby Smith.
Yeah. And we had to wear these garish-looking black and green and yellow ties with stars all over them,
right.
Whether we liked it or not. So we just done the North Stars versus the Rangers. I was with my crew, producer, and a couple other guys, and we're having dinner. And one of my mates said, "There's a guy over in the corner. He's staring at you. He must know you." And I looked over and I said, "I don't think I know him." So that was that. 10 minutes later, no, that guy does know you because he's getting up and he's walking over here. So, tall guy, looked down. I was seated, and he said, "I grew up in Detroit, and used to watch Hockey Night in Canada all the time on the Windsor station. And so saw you every Saturday night, and this and that and the other thing." I said, "Well, thank you very much." And I said, "And what do you do?" And he said, "Well, I'm a drummer in a rock band." And I said, "What band?" He said, "You're probably not gonna know it." And I said, "Try me." He said, "My name's Chad Smith. I'm with the Red Hot Chili Peppers."
Whoa.
And I said, "Suck my kiss, man." And and he said, "Oh, you do know us." I said, "Oh, yeah, I know you." And I said, "Oh, I have kids." But, I mean, that was just, no. It was me that knew him. So he said, "What are you doing tomorrow night?" This was a Friday night. And I said, "Well, I'm on a plane tomorrow morning." "Well, if you could wait till Sunday morning," he said, "you could be our guest at Saturday Night Live. We're doing Saturday Night Live tomorrow night." And I said, "Oh, geez, that's really too bad." And he said, "It's a big night because it's not known, but we have two guest performers that is going to make it an interesting night. Madonna and Barbara Streisand are going to be on the show." And I was kicking myself. And I said, "Chad, I'd love to be there, obviously." Fast forward to the end of this, one of the most watched shows in Saturday Night Live history,
I remember,
was
that.
Madonna and, yeah, Barbara Streisand. And Roseanne was the host, which didn't do a lot for me.
They did a coffee talk.
That's it. That was
the
start of it. That was the start of it. So anyway, before I said thanks for the last time and sorry I couldn't go, I said, maybe you could take this stupid-looking tie and wear it, and then, you know, a little bit of me would be on the show. Maybe it had too much wine. I don't know. But he said, "Oh, we kind of don't wear anything, you know, if you know us." yeah, you're right. But he said, give me the tie anyway. And they said, watch the show. We'll do something with the tie. We'll do something to make you go, eh. So half an hour in, or however long it took to wait for the curtain to draw back, and Roseanne to say, here's the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and draped over the drum kit. So the next time you want to see that episode.
Is it on YouTube?
Yes. It's not hard to find at all. Yeah. And there's this black, green, and yellow tie. You can't miss it if you're looking for it. And so that's my appearance on Saturday Night Live, or my ties anyway. And yeah, I mean, not to put too much meaning into it, but there's, you know, there's the power of sports drifting into music. And, you know, who in the world knew that, you know, Chad Smith would know me, or I would know what he does and know a lot about what he does and be able to prove it to him.
Wow. That's probably the best story I've heard since in 2017.
It usually goes over pretty well.
Yeah.
And especially when you know, when there's proof.
When
YouTube can back me up.
Right. I think Chad Smith, to me, a great drummer. Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course. But for me, as a Kiss fan, Chad Smith's claim to fame, main claim to fame, I think, would be he was in the crowd when you turn Kiss Alive's live album back and see the crowd shot. He was actually in the crowd. He's not in the photo, but he's obscured by someone's head, I've read. So that's like a pretty big thing that Chad Smith was in that photo. That's what I think of when I hear his name. That is an amazing story. So I know Chad Smith is like, he's been down since day one. But the fact that he knows you, being from America.
Yeah, and, no.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We should, you know, not to drop more names, but if we're talking about, you know, rock and roll, I'm a huge fan of the Hold Steady, and I've introduced them several times over the years. You can't put me in one category because I'm not in it for long. I bounce around and Dropkick Murphys, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I have a son who's in his mid-30s who is a bigger punk rock guy than me. He's gone to places that I wouldn't. But there had to be some influence growing up and
right.
growing up in this house. And
does he have as big a collection?
No, but mine is available to him
right.
Whenever. He loves Bouncing Souls and all that all that stuff.
Right.
He's and Frank Turner. I don't know if you know Frank Turner and the Sleeping Souls. Frank
I've
is a
heard
UK
the name.
Kind of a modern day Billy Bragg, but much right. more punk and much more rock. And Frank, he's high on my list of people that I want to see whenever I can. And he and Arkells have just finished touring together.
Now, has your son turned you on to music?
He will. He'll bring me stuff and say, here, listen to the Gaslight Anthem. I didn't know until he said, here,
right.
listen to this. I think you'll like this. So occasionally, but more often it works the other way.
Really? That's that isn't usual.
No.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And of course, when I came over here, I brought, I don't know, 5 or 6 CDs. And one thing, I think it was a couple of years back, or no, actually maybe 5 years back, when I first reached out to you on through Twitter, I think, and I said, look, Dave, I need to send you our new album. And then I've told the story before, and you go, if it's below the belt, I already have it. like what? So I didn't bring Below the Belt.
No,
but
it's here.
Yeah, and I think looking through your collection, I could actually see which labels did a really good job at promoting our CD, because you have pretty much all of it up to a certain point. Thank God I brought those ones, and I can now know that certain label didn't do a good enough job.
No.
So
it's
something I always suspected.
That'd be my fault.
No, I've brought you the copies, and of course, yeah, I'm here on the release date of our new album, Wildcat, and there isn't any other place I'd rather be. I'm glad to be here.
Let me, because I usually ask questions, not answer them. If you're not working and you have a chance to walk across the street and see a show, name anybody. Who do you want to see?
Oh. Well, I can only say a band that I can only name bands that I'm listening to currently.
Okay.
And right now, my favorite new rock band or newish rock band is a band from Australia called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. You know them.
Okay, sure.
I mean, what the hell?
Their latest record came out last week.
Yes. Do you have it?
I don't have it.
No. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I've heard that they're going to put out 5 this year.
They do a lot.
Yeah.
They 5, do a lot.
Yeah. So you are aware of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. This is like another moment to blow me away.
But on those 25 sites that I'm visiting, I'm seeing lots of names and listening to lots of stuff. And I mean to know what is out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the band I would cross the street to see. And for me, it's a little harder, which is one of the questions I wanted to ask you. I guess, you know, we're winding down here. But for me, going to see a show takes a lot. It takes a lot for me to go see someone's show now.
And that's because?
It reminds me of going to the office on a Sunday. I'm touring so much that I want stillness and quiet when I'm off the road. Is that how it is for you when you see, like, maybe, oh, you know, Calgary versus the Leafs, would you go to the game?
If I'm not working, other reason to go, somebody's not, you know, inviting me to a private box, and I can ignore the game if I wish.
The game.
Probably not. And I didn't used to go to music shows for a long time for two reasons. One, I used to be a heavy smoker, and then I stopped smoking, but you could still smoke in clubs, and I couldn't do that. And the other reason is, if I wanted to go to hear music, I didn't want to be stopped by every second hockey fan and asked who's going to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Right.
Now, I'm not recognized as much as I was back in those days, so I don't have either of those problems anymore.
Right.
The venues are smoke-free, and I can get around the hockey questions a lot easier than I used to be able to do. And so, you know, what started me going? Well, I'll tell you what started me going to shows. It was Kathleen Edwards. I don't know if you're familiar with Kathleen.
I do. I know her.
But I heard her record and went, like, I got to know more. Who is this? Where did she come from? When could I see her? And I was saying this out loud at a hockey game, in fact, and somebody said, "Oh, she's playing at the Phoenix in 2 nights. Do you want to go? I'll get you in." Yeah, I want to go. And I wasn't in the habit of going to see shows. The next thing you know, her manager is phoning me and saying, "Apparently, you're coming to the show. How would you like to introduce her on stage?" So Kathleen and I became very close friends for quite a few years. Joel Plaskett was on the same show, so that's the first time I met him. And from Kathleen, I met, you know, Jim Cuddy and Sam Roberts and this and that. And that opened the door to, and now I was able to say, I don't have any problem going to these shows because I know who I'm going to see and I can have fun seeing them. I think musicians are the nicest people in the world. You probably know some you don't like, but I don't know who they are, honestly. And I could, you know, you probably don't know any hockey players that you don't like.
Right.
I could tell you some of those.
Right.
And obviously, it's natural. I'm, you know, in when you're working, you're not seeing the best side, and then not seeing the best side of me either, perhaps. But boy, oh boy, if there are bad people playing music, I've never met them. Honestly, they're welcoming. They're fun to be with. If there are stereotypes there, they don't fit them. Not the people I've met. And that makes it all the more satisfying. Is not you're not going to hear music. I don't anyway, as much as I am going to see friends.
Well, Jim Cuddy's a great guy. You mentioned Jim Cuddy. He's a super nice guy.
And the whole, and Blue Rodeo's had, the musicians come and go, and you go, how are they ever going to do without him? And they find somebody else who's as good or better. Mm-hmm. And they're all, they're all terrific, terrific guys and girls. And that really appeals to me. Mm-hmm. The chance to meet these people and to know more about what makes them tick. And, they want to talk sports too. And I want to talk music. And so that's the only time we clash, really.
Right.
Enough of the least. Tell me about, your next record.
Yeah, well, that's why I wasn't really worried coming here, because I didn't really want to talk to sport about sports with you. And I figured you wouldn't want to do that anyways.
Exactly.
This is a chance for you to kind of stretch out and talk about music for a change. So I wasn't worried about that. But I'm sure when I post this podcast, people are going to tune in. Some people are going to tune in because they're probably going to want to listen to a sports chat.
Yeah. Well, on behalf of Danko Jones, let me apologize to those folks, because neither of us wants to talk hockey. Not this time, anyway.
Not this time. Maybe in the future. You got to get me. I'm always the Leafs when I play EA Sports, uh-huh. NHL hockey. I'm always the Leafs. Always. Always the Blue Jays.
Well, the question I get, of course, are you a Leaf fan? And were you a Leaf fan? And there are now 30 teams, soon to be 31 when Vegas joins the NHL. And I like them all equally. Because you train yourself, or I did in those days anyway, to not show any bias. Mm-hmm. I think it's only fair to the people out there who weren't cheering for the Leafs that I not be seen as somebody who might annoy them. And so I tried to play it right down the middle. And all I say is, I'm a fan of the check arriving on time and not bouncing. Yes, it is work. It's fun work, but I can't allow myself to care who wins or loses.
Right.
I mean, I want the best team to win. There are some people you'd like to see win more than others, but they're scattered all over 30 teams. So,
right.
It doesn't sound right to say you don't care who wins, but I'm happy no matter who wins.
Right. No, I hear you. Yeah. You have to be neutral. You mentioned, there's musicians that, I could probably name off that aren't very nice, and the same goes for athletes. But please don't dash my dreams. I've been a Mike Bossy fan since I was a kid. Is that guy a cool guy?
Well, let me say he's an independent thinker.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay.
So you can like a whole lot of that independent thinking, but then there's sometimes that Mike says something that, really? Okay. Yeah, he's a good guy. Sure.
Well, the only reason I bring up Mike Bossy is because I had I've been a Leafs fan since I was a kid, but there was a time when I was a huge New York Islanders fan when they won the Stanley Cup with Bob Nystrom and Trache. And so Bossy was my guy. It was the 50 goals and 50 games era. And my mom knew I was such a huge fan. She wrote into a TV show called Thrill of a Lifetime. I don't know if you remember that show. Thrill of a Lifetime. It was like a CTV. Shannon Tweed wanted to be a Playboy playmate, so they got her. It's like people write in, I want to jump out of a plane. I want to be a
playmate.
We'll make it happen.
So did you meet Mike Bossy?
They called me for an interview, and they asked me, what do you want to do with Mike Bossy? And the correct answer would have been play hockey with him.
Right.
But my mom didn't let me play ice hockey. And so I said, I don't know, go to a movie with him. And so I didn't get the thing. The next season, Bossy was on the show with a kid playing hockey, and I watched it in horror. And I knew
Somebody took your place.
Someone took my place. So Bossy's always been there. He hasn't left. So anytime I think about hockey these days, I'm like, yeah, Bossy. Yeah.
Well, after one of those Islander Cups, they won it in Long Island, and the party afterwards lasted till 5:30 in the morning, that I remember anyway. And there were two people left in the room, me and Gordon Lightfoot. Gordon was a close friend growing up in Aurelia with Jigs McDonald, who was the Islander play-by-play guy for a lot of years. Did some, he worked with other teams, L.A. and Florida, Leafs for a while. Jigs had said to Gordon, "You got to come here and watch the Islanders win the Cup," because Gordon was an Oilers fan. And Jigs said, you know, "My team will beat your team," kind of.
Right, right.
So there we are at 5:30 in the morning. Gordon Lightfoot, and I had not met Gordon before. This was a pretty good chance to meet him because there was nobody else there. And again, I didn't want to talk hockey, obviously, with Gordon Lightfoot. So I said, one of my, you know, clumsy questions, I said, "Gordon, you could put a record on any record at all now, and we could sit here and listen to. What would it be?" And he paused for a minute and he said, "You wouldn't know of it." He said, "But there's a record, an old folk record called Gibson and Camp at the Gate of Horn." This was Bob Gibson and Bob Camp at the Gate of Horn, was a club in Chicago. And I looked at him and I said, "Gordon, if you'd asked me that question, my answer would have been the very same as yours." I said, "That is my favorite folk record, not by Bob Dylan." And to this day, now when I see him, and I'm frequently in Gordon's company, let's put it that way, I always remind him, you know, we both liked the same record, and we both proved it that night at 5:30 in the morning, that morning at 5:30 after the Islanders won the Cup.
Wow.
And what were the odds that that would be his response?
Right, right.
But I can play you that, and not that you necessarily would like it. But in my folk days, that was the record that I listened to more than anything else. And he liked it too.
Wow.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger. I'm traveling through this world of woe. And there's no sickness, no toil or danger in that bright land to which I go. I'm going there to see my father. Over Jordan, I'm going there to my new home. One of these mornings,